Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, the game, hour number two here on a Monday. Good to have you in as we are live from Pete and Terry's Tavern, Bridgestone Arena today. The Predators preseason doubleheader gets underway as exhibition hockey against the Florida Panthers is on tap today, just about 2.5 weeks away from the regular season counting. And we will get back to that and also all things college football, Vols, SEC, and just a little bit. But right now, our buddy Corey Curtis from News 2 is joining us here on Morning Drive. Corey, pleasure seeing you yesterday inside the press box. What was your biggest takeaway from what we witnessed for 60 minutes?
Well, I guess this is it, that the Titans want to go from good to great, and they're just not there yet. Because good to great means following up one good win with another one, or one good performance with another one, and this is just the pattern that we've seen before, not coming up with the same performance week in and week out.
Corey, were you surprised with sort of the play calling toward the end, third quarter going into the fourth quarter, and basically that last drive, where they seem to have gotten totally away from Derrick Henry, and they went more so to this Deion Lewis or trying to pass the football? I just thought if they were going to win that game, they had to give it to Derrick Henry.
Well, with a minute to go and no timeouts, I mean,
it's hard to do it. Yeah,
yeah, you can't do that then. But Mace, what was really surprising was as they were moving the ball to end the third quarter, and then they opened the fourth quarter, and Deion Lewis is on the field for the first two plays. And look, everybody's got to play, and they got a plan, and I know all that, but they're still winning at that point, and looks like they were starting to put something together on a hot day. You thought they were going to pound away, and then Deion Lewis comes on the field. I can't remember if they got a first down after that or not. I think they did, and I have to look at the play chart to see what the plays were after that. But did you guys ever feel like they got in a rhythm and you knew what they wanted to do yesterday? Because I didn't. That's what I didn't feel like. I didn't ever feel like this is what the Titans want to do today.
I mean, to me, Corey, the start of the third quarter, to your question, sort of where I'm going to go with this, the start of the third quarter, they get a three and out, they go down the field and they score a touchdown, then they get another stop, then they go down the field and get a field goal. They're in complete control of the game at that point. They're dominating the third quarter. They get possession in their own territory. They give the ball to Derrick Henry three straight times for 35 yards. That is a first down average per carry. And to your point, they come into the fourth quarter and they change the strategy. That was the moment it felt like that was the game where they have the lead, they've dominated in the third quarter, and they're running the football down your throat. Why are you changing the strategy? So the question I have for you, because that's to answer your question, it feeds into my question here. Of all the decisions that the coaching staff made, including that one, including letting 30 seconds run off the clock on a fourth and two, including spiking
crazy.
The ball on third and two, including the offensive philosophy, including the fourth down call, including the not challenging the PIs, sort of how do you – where are the biggest mistakes, in your opinion, for the coaching staff when you look at how they performed yesterday?
Well, that fourth and one, number one, they were down 2 points. I thought they should have gone for it because if you hold them to a field goal, you're still only down five. And you trust your defense to hold them to three. So I may have gone for it there. But not knowing what you were going to do was, I think, the big mistake there. I mean, because that's what it looked like to me. Like, they didn't know what they were going to do. You know, because they clearly didn't have the punt team ready to get on the field. And then, they can say all they want that they wanted to draw an offsides, but Marcus and the team are standing there looking at the sideline. That's the worst effort I've ever seen to try and draw someone offsides if that was what they really wanted to do. That was not great. Third and two, what's tough about that for me is, like, if you may throw short on that play, and it looked like, they were prepared to throw short on that play, you better have another play ready to go. That's my thinking on that. And that was second and 10 was coming off of a spike. So, you were in the huddle. You had time to call play and another play and be ready to go. I guess it's lack of preparation, and I hate to make, blanket accusations that I really don't know. But they didn't seem prepared for certain scenarios. And, they, and it showed in the way that it executed down the stretch. But again, I think I just saw the snap count at 30-30, Henry for Lewis. And, you know, obviously Derrick Henry had a bigger impact on that game than Deion Lewis did. And the Titans running plays with Derrick Henry had a bigger impact than when Deion Lewis was out there. Now, Deion had to be out there at the end of the game when you're running, you know, 2 minutes trying to get up the field. But it just, like, you know, they got away from what was working. And it's that whole identity question of who are you? And that's what gets me is, you know, be who you are. The Colts didn't get away from who they were. They were down 17-13, and they ran for 55 yards to set up the game-winning score. And so I felt like, you know, and look, sometimes you're toast of the town and sometimes you're toast. And Arthur Smith has that in 2 weeks. And it's a long season, and everybody's going to learn a lot. And, you know, we all overreact to stuff, you know, right off the bat. And so I don't know how much we're overreacting here. But we also know what looks right and what looks wrong. And it looked disjointed, I guess is the best way to put it.
Corey Curtis, News 2, joining us here on Morning Drive. One thing that's really becoming an issue for me is the third down conversion success rate for this team.
It's becoming an issue for them.
Say that again?
It's becoming an issue for them. 3 for 20.
Yeah, 30. I mean, it really is. They're 3 for 20 the first 2 weeks, 1 for 10 against the Colts, and 2 for 10 against the Browns. And I'm not going to put all the blame on one guy because I think, you know, some of it's the quarterback, some of it's the scheming, but I believe we were discussing this yesterday in the press box. Adam Humphries is getting $36 million, and the guy should be on the back of a milk carton after 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's stunning to see, like, everything they threw to him was like bubble screen or on the line of scrimmage. And I don't understand that. I mean, I don't understand that. And so beyond that, I don't know. And I thought this guy was going to be, you know, a chain mover, especially against the zone defense. You thought he would find pockets in the zone and be able to move the chains. And, you know, you have receivers who catch the ball at the yardsticks and decide to give up 2 yards. You know, that doesn't help certainly either when you're trying to move the chains. That didn't help yesterday. But, yeah, I mean, and they've got, you know, Marcus said it, they've got too many third and longs. I charted all 10 of the third downs, well, the 9 that they didn't execute, and I think 5 of them were 10 yards or longer. You know, and 3 of them were like 15, 17, and 18. You know, because that's coming off of sacks or penalties. So, you know, how many times were the Colts in 3rd and 1 yesterday? It seemed like a bunch because they were 7 of 14 on 3rd down. And that's also too high of a number, you know, for your defense. And so, you know, offensively, you know, there were, you know, this all comes down to mistakes, guys. You know, they had mistakes in all 3 phases yesterday. They had mistakes in the kicking game. They had plentiful mistakes on defense. I know the defense played well, but they had mistakes that ultimately cost them the game. And on offense, you know, they had mistakes. You know, the sacks are drive killers. Marcus scrambles for 9 yards and gets flipped up in the air, and then they get called for a holding penalty and end up having to punt on that drive. They would have the ball at midfield. You know, that was a drive killer. You know, they didn't commit these mistakes in Cleveland. They committed them yesterday against the Colts. And, you know, they've got to get that cleaned up. And if they do, they'll probably be okay. But that's why I say early in the season, the sample size is so small. We kind of overreact to everything because it's all we got.
Well, if history is any indication of where this offense, from a passing standpoint, is going to be, then they have a long way, because I think some of the problems that they were having last year are rearing its ugly head this year. They still have not found a way to get Corey Davis the ball consistently.
Nope.
They haven't found a way to use Adam Humphries. Marcus Mariota, if he's not looking at Delanie Walker, it seems like he's a little bit disjointed in what he wants to do. It seems, like you said, Corey, they don't have an identity, and it goes back to last year. They don't know exactly what they want to be. I think they can be a dominant run game, but the minute you think they should run with 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter when you're down 2 points, you throw 2 straight passes and then put yourself in a position where you got to punt the ball after the third one. I don't know exactly where does this team want to be. They went out and got all this talent supposedly on offense, but yet still they don't know what they want to be.
Well, you know, we thought after Cleveland, okay, they're going to get back to running the football and doing play action because that's what Marcus has done well in his career. I mean, I think the two DeMarco Murray years, he was number one or number two in the NFL in play action passer rating. And then they come out week one, all three of his touchdowns are play action pass. This touchdown, you know, was play action pass. He should have had a second touchdown yesterday, but Jonnu Smith got help, or that would have been a second touchdown off of play action yesterday. And so you thought they were going to run and set up everything off of play action. And they ran some yesterday, and like you said, they didn't seem wholeheartedly committed to it. And look, I understand, you know, the defense, you know, might be dictating that you're going to have to do other things, but you're also absolutely right. I mean, look, Corey Davis, the fifth pick of the draft, you're giving Adam Humphries all this money. You've got to be able to get these guys the football. And Marcus, you know, for whatever reason, you know, last season a hesitancy developed in his game, you know, and it some of it is still there this season. I don't know if it's a fear of turning the football over. I don't know if it's a lack of trust, you know, in his targets at times. But
offensive line. Offensive line.
Yeah, or the offensive line. But, I mean, there are times when he just doesn't throw it away or just doesn't grip it and rip it. And I don't know why. This gets into a whole bigger Marcus conversation. But, you know, we've seen this guy can do it. I mean, we've seen him make plays. We've seen him win games. And they've got to get that mojo back, that flow, that confidence to just drop back there, trust what he sees, and throw the football, and give him a pocket, you know, to do it in. I think what Saffold giving up sacks in back-to-back games now.
Yeah, I think all of this is changed a little bit when the best player on the team comes back in 2 weeks in Taylor Lewan. You get Jacksonville real quick,
hurt.
Corey. You get Jacksonville in like 3 days, so no time to think about all this stuff and all these mistakes. They've owned Jacksonville. Jacksonville's on its backup quarterback. What do you make of this situation on Thursday night?
Well, if you don't like conservative play calling, and I hate to call it conservative play calling, because I do think the lack of Lewan has affected the way they've called plays. I do that. Because, like, there was no downfield throwing yesterday, really, except for that one shot to Delanie Walker. And I think that lack of trust in the offensive line to protect for extended periods of time has affected what they're doing. That's only going to be accentuated against Jacksonville. Because my bet is they feel like if they go to Jacksonville against Gardner Minshew, don't turn the football over, they're going to win the game. So I look for a highly, highly conservative effort against the Jaguars. But a team that knows, you know, it has another opportunity in front of it to win. But that was a long physical game yesterday in brutal conditions. We'll see how they can bounce back in a short period of time.
Corey, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a great day.
You got it. Corey Curtis, News 2, joins us every Monday following a Titans game. We'll come back. Let's open up the phones again. We'll get your calls on the Titans, 737-1025, if you want to jump in, 615-737-1025. Of course, we're broadcasting live Pete and Terry's Tavern today, Bridgestone Arena. Predators pregame today for the doubleheader begins at 3 o'clock with Game 1 puck drop at 3:30. Game 2 is at 7 o'clock, and the doors will open at 2 o'clock today with happy hour from 3 until 6 p.m. Your Titans calls when we come back, 737-1025, here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 1025 The Game, as we are live this morning, Pete and Terry's Tavern, Bridgestone Arena. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise, Jeff Kelty, Preds assistant GM, in about 15 minutes. We'll get to the SEC from the weekend that was in a moment. Let's wrap up some Titans conversation for this half of the show with our buddy John in Nashville, who's next on Morning Drive. John, you go ahead. What do you got, bud?
Good morning, guys. As always, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Quick shout out to Marquise. He always kills it coming back from the break. my two quick points. One, it seems like Malcolm Butler has been getting beat every week since, I believe, dating back to the Philly game last year. T.Y. caught him in the back of the end zone yesterday. Quick opinion on what you guys think about that. My second one is, shortly after the Jacoby Brissett fumble, Marcus takes a sack, then scrambles. So my question is, that the hesitancy he has with letting the ball rip down the field, or is it more of a play calling receiver issue? I mean, I know we're going to live with him not turning it over, but, I mean, that, you know, we talk about good to great. A good team would have won that football game yesterday. And I think that the drops we had, you know, although everything isn't Marcus' fault, but we dropped some balls, and then there were some points where I felt like, of course, we've been talking about it all summer. He's holding over that ball, and it's killing our momentum. And I'll hang up and get him.
Well, I think Malcolm Butler has played a lot better since the start of last season. Now, he was – we understand he had his troubles first part of the season, but then he kind of picked up.
Which he talked about with us.
Yeah, but, I mean, T.Y. is just a Titan killer, period. It's 3rd and 19. He finds a hole in the defense and gets a first down.
And that was his own, his own coverage.
It's like – y'all know who he wants to throw the ball to, but yet and still nobody covers the guy, and he's wide open.
Yeah.
He beat Malcolm Butler late in the game, and Jacoby Brissett overthrew him. T.Y., it doesn't matter who lines up against him, whether it's Logan, whether it's Jackson, or whether it's Malcolm Butler. He just seems to be a Titans killer. Now, when you talk about the second part, Marcus and his hesitancy with throwing a ball, well, these are not new problems. Marcus has always been a tick slow at throwing the football, and it's, you know, a lot of times it has hurt them. He has taken sacks because, like Corey said, he just won't grip it and rip it. And I think that's what Vrabel has been trying to get him to do. Just hit your back foot and release the ball. Throw it. Well, here's the thing. If he hadn't changed now, he ain't going to change. So don't look for him to change. He might have a point here and there where he grips it and rips and let it rip. But for the most part, like Singletary said, or not Singletary, but Cardinals.
Denny Green.
Yeah, Denny Green. They are who we thought they were. He is who we thought he was. He's a good quarterback.
Yeah.
He's an okay to good quarterback.
Yeah.
Don't expect anything more from him.
And I don't think anybody on this show, including myself, has ever said that he is a great quarterback. He took sacks yesterday. Now, you know, on the third down in plus territory where you take a sack, he's got to throw the football away. But that would have been a 35-yard field goal instead of a 45-yard field goal. Again, the kicker isn't in the NFL. You should make both of those. So, like, again, it's a huge play. You got to throw the football away instead of just standing there. But I think the caller's dead on, though. It's a combination of everything. You have an extremely conservative game plan and identity that has been that way for 25 years, and it doesn't seem to be changing under Arthur Smith. You've got a quarterback who's hesitant, a tick late, like you said. I agree. He's equally to be blamed for this. He takes too many sacks. The receivers haven't proven yet that they're down-the-field stars that can make big plays. Corey Davis demanded the ball a little bit yesterday, but even then, it wasn't very noticeable. So you put it all together. Oh, by the way, the offensive line is not very good either, which I think to me is also the biggest concern on offense right now. Is they need Taylor Lewan desperately.
They lose Panfield.
They need Taylor Lewan desperately to be back on the field because that changes the way they can call plays. And so you put it all together, a quarterback who's a tick late, receivers who haven't proven themselves yet, a coordinator that wants to play conservatively and throw screen passes and run the football, which we all are okay with, and, oh, by the way, the offensive line can't block for more than a second and a half. You put it all together, and you get a team that went down the field one time yesterday. Now, that still would have been enough to win the game had they just not screwed up in the fourth quarter.
We'll get back to the Titans coming up to kick off the 8 o'clock hour, but about 3 or 4 minutes here on college football from the weekend in the SEC. I know you want to get to the quarterbacks in the East. We'll do that in a second, but I'm going to give you a take. And Derek Mason, this is to you.
I love it.
And man, I want you to enjoy this, and I want you to absorb it. I want you to soak it in, because I will not give you this gratification many days.
And when Bama wins by 30, he's going to come in and sing a different tune.
I can't believe I actually witnessed this, and I'm going to say it, and I'm going to try not to vomit on my own shirt. But the LSU passing game is better than the Alabama running game. In a million years, I never thought I would say LSU through the air is better than Alabama on the ground, but it's 100% true through 3 weeks.
What was Bama, like 75 yards rushing against South Carolina?
They can't run the ball, and I see Joe Burrow slinging it around like he's in the arena league.
Here's the thing.
The world is backwards.
Because I was obviously I was paying attention to that. I wanted to purposely watch LSU and Northwestern State play. I knew LSU would win it, but I purposely wanted to watch that game because I wanted to see more of this offense and what it could do. And the underlying theme that I heard on the broadcast was Joe Burrow, he didn't feel comfortable last year with a lot of the play action, turning his back to the defense and then having to turn around and try to scan things. He never felt comfortable. Lo and behold, they bring in a new offensive coordinator, a guy that thinks differently. Passing game guru. Now you don't see Joe Burrow turning his back to the defense anymore.
RPO.
Everything is, I'm looking at the defense, I'm scanning the field as I'm doing these RPOs, and I can read better. That is what's making this LSU offense a lot better than what it was last year. They've always had the talent. It's just now you put it. They said, Joe Burrow, this is the offense he ran in high school. He loves this offense. He's used to this offense. Yep. He's more equipped to run this offense. Well, if that's the case, then it's going to be hard-pressed for me to think that anybody, short of maybe Alabama, and I still think they're going to beat Alabama, I don't think anybody from here on out is going to beat LSU, and that's Alabama included. LSU is, I think they're on a mission. I think they got the right coach for the right time with the right temperament for the right team.
It's hard to disagree with any of that. Now, they've got some big tests before they get to Tuscaloosa in November. I do know this is what happens, Nick. This is the Alabamification of college football. We look at Trevor Lawrence for Clemson, right? Mm-hmm. 390.
That guy.
Hang on.
Listen, you can get to him, but that guy is totally – there's nobody close to him.
No, I agree. But here's what I'm going to get at. Tua Tagovailoa set a personal high with 444 yards and 5 touchdowns, and Alabama won by 30. And I don't remember what the total number was. They didn't cover the spread, but it was basically a blowout on the road against an SEC team. And Nick Saban's probably going to put in the tape and go, we gave up too many chunk plays on defense, and we didn't run the ball well. It's this nitpicking of greatness now. This is what's happening. Trevor Lawrence went for 395 yards, and the only thing anybody's talking about, they won 41-6, and the only thing anyone's talking about with Trevor Lawrence, well, he's got more interceptions so far in 3 games than he did all of last year. He's forcing it. Like, this is what we do with these great teams, is we nitpick them to death because they're so good. Like, yes, Alabama struggled to run the football, but they had a record-breaking passing day. Yes, they gave up some chunk plays. They won by 30. Trevor Lawrence, they struggled. Oklahoma with Jalen Hurts is putting up huge numbers. Ohio State was totally dominant on the road against Indiana. Defense, offense, everything. But that's what happens is even in blowout wins, we still nitpick because we know they're all going to come together at the end of the year and play each other, and that's when all those real issues come to LSU, Bama. That's what we nitpick until they play.
I'm telling you, I'm watching Trevor Lawrence, and if you can tank for Trevor Lawrence, do it.
That I agree with that.
Because this kid, man, he made some throws Saturday off the wrong foot running that were just amazing.
And people are like, oh, he's pressing. I'm like, what?
That kid is far and above better than any college quarterback right now.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, we will get back to college, the Titans, all of that in the 8 o'clock hour. But up next, we talk to Jeff Kelty, Preds Assistant General Manager. He's going to give us a call, give us the lowdown on a couple of things that we are looking for some answers to. We'll try to get that next here on Morning Drive Live from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, as we are live this morning. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise, Pete and Terry's Tavern. Bridgestone Arena, free breakfast. Stop on out. We've got free coffee and free donuts here. And if you missed that, don't worry. We got you covered for lunch. Bacon cheeseburger, draft beer for just $12.50. I don't know. Bacon, burgers, and beer. It's kind of like what dudes love.
For lunch on a Monday, sign me up.
I mean, if you want like a arugula salad, go elsewhere.
I'll be down here for the first game with the 2.5-year-old, almost 3 year. Oh, she's almost 3. That's crazy. Loves coming to games. Loves being at the game, and she doesn't get to go to many because of the 7 o'clock puck drops normally. So, gonna be fun. Gonna be exciting, and it's good to have hockey back. So.
And speaking of hockey, I don't know if my girls would actually be skilled skaters in the world of hockey, but there's one thing that I know they would be really, really good at. if they ever joined like an all female hockey team, they would be the goons,
the checking line. Yeah.
They would drop their gloves and throw haymakers.
Well, let me ask you though, because they both have, you have twin girls that are 5 years old, right? So they have very different personalities. You've always said one is sort of like a terrorist and one is sort of a princess, right?
Correct.
Is that true?
Correct.
Now, so we want the terrorist on the fourth line,
yes,
and we want the princess on the power play,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I kind of have like a. Like a Brian Boyle and a Rocco Grimaldi as my daughters. Like me as the princess, so she's Rocco.
And then the other with the stick.
And then the other one just hits you in the face.
Yeah.
And she's going, any chance you get.
And then she's going to the box for 4 minutes.
Double. It's not even minors. It's just double. It's literally double minors.
Exactly. Yeah, if you're going to do it, do it.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go.
Which is elite. Which is, by the way, Chris Mason always says this, and I love this line. The things that you can do in hockey that are two-minute penalties – are literally criminal on the sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Like, if you did it on Broadway, you go to jail.
If I slash somebody with a stick I found on the ground, I'd be in jail for a while.
It's not like that in any other sports, like a hand-checking foul in basketball where they touched fingernails. No, that's not a crime outside of the arena.
All right, let's get your Titans calls. A lot of people jump back in, 737-1025. Let's go with let's go to Ron in Murfreesboro next on Morning Drive. Go ahead, Ron.
Hey, guys. It's week two. Just remember that. The thing that got me the most is we did not stop the two out of the three things that we needed to win. We didn't stop their offensive line. We didn't stop Mac. Yeah, he only had 51 yards, but they were key. Also, the start of the fourth quarter, we played not to lose. Our defense was back on its heels. We weren't leaning forward. And I blame partially the NFL because, yes, Jacoby Brissett is a great quarterback in evading. But back in the day, you used to have linemen and linebackers would stick their nose straight up your shoulder pads, and now people are afraid of 15-yard penalties. So, yes, he was elusive, but I think we needed to bury people pushing up daisies. But again, then again, it's week two. We got to get this game going on for week three. If we flub week three, there might be a quarterback controversy. I'm not done yet, but still, got to give him his chance.
Well, here's the thing, Ron.
He's the fifth-rated quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yeah, ratings are overrated. Stop looking at that number.
No turnovers.
There's no way. That's where stats lie. Like, you look at the quarterback rating. Yeah, when you throw a bunch of six-yard completions. Yeah.
I agree. No,
of
no.
The ratings
listen.
High.
No, I'm not defending Marcus. I'm just saying the quarterback controversy is a dumb topic to bring up. Here's what I wrote down for the defense, and you guys tell me what you guys think, because I think we haven't talked a lot about the defense yet, because they largely played pretty well. Adoree Jackson is inventing a new penalty at that point on that play. That is a defensive face interference guarding penalty for like 55 yards. He did all of the wrong things on that play, including letting the guy run right past him. They had three or four sacks, to the caller's point, where Jayon Brown has him wrapped up. I don't think it's the new NFL.
Derek, I'm not blaming that on the NFL. You got to make the tackle.
You can speak. I was going to say, that's how I was going to react, but I was going to let you do that. You have him wrapped up in the backfield for a sack. You have to bring him down. It happened more than one occasion. They missed three or four sack opportunities, and that particular one led to a first down, which led to points on that drive. That was the same drive as the pass interference on Malcolm Butler. 34 carries for 167 yards at 5 yards per carry, rushing the football yesterday for the Colts. I'm sorry. That's not a good recipe for your defense.
But see, it wasn't
167 yards and five yards a carry on 34 carries. You normally get beat when you give that up on.
But it wasn't Mac that got him. And
no,
it wasn't even Nyheim Hines.
Phillips had the long run.
Who the heck is Jordan Wilkins?
Or Wilkins?
Wilkins. Yeah. Well, he was a guy that got through the Titans' defensive line and scampered for 50 yards.
Like, we're all looking around like, who is Jordan Wilkins?
Again, I don't care who did it. 34 carries, 167 yards, 5 yards a carry. That's what the Titans defense gave up on the ground yesterday. Logan Ryan getting beat in the end zone, just absolutely torched. Logan Ryan had a really good game otherwise, but in a critical situation, he got torched. So,
and last week, Chubb was good for Cleveland, although they had to avert and abandon the run, or else he would have had 100
yards.
Well,
that's the difference.
This is the problem moving forward, is that they were not good against the run last year. They're still not good against the run this year. Luckily they won the Cleveland game, but I always say that sometimes when the team wins, everybody gloss over the bad stuff that happens. It's like, oh, they won. We're not going to talk about anything bad. Well, last week they didn't stop the run. Last week they gave up situations on defense they shouldn't have. Last week the offense didn't play particularly well. Last week, Marcus didn't throw the ball particularly well, but no one said anything because they won 43-13. Well, those same problems they had last week, they had this week. But the team was better. And it showed up the team that they played yesterday didn't shoot themselves in the foot with penalties.
What did we say all week? They played it straight up. What did we say all week? The Colts are a better team right now today. I think that's the other thing we need. There is so much blame, right? We're going to blame the coaching staff. We're going to blame Marcus for holding onto the ball too long. We're going to blame the receiving corps. We're going to blame the game plan. We're going to blame the special teams. You know, even when Marcus took a sack, which was a bad decision on the third and seven, which was late in the game, a 45-yard field goal is something an NFL kicker should make. I'm sorry. A 45-yard field goal is not a long field goal. College kicker, different discussion. But a 45-yard field goal is a kick you should make in the NFL more times than not, period. Mm-hmm. So even with the sack, which was a mistake, and the play calling from Arthur Smith on that drive, which was a mistake, the kicker still could have made the field goal kick. He didn't. But all of that's true, but let's just call us. The Colts are not a bad football team. If Andrew Luck was their quarterback still, we'd be picking him to go to the Super Bowl or win the division or go deep in the playoffs. You know, pick your poison. They're a good football team.
I think you saw the difference yesterday between the Colts and the Browns because – at the end of three quarters yesterday, the Colts had more plays, they had more time of possession, and they were better on third downs, but yet the Titans were winning because they were winning the turnover battle and they had lesser penalties. That didn't hold up for the final outcome because Indianapolis is simply a better team than Cleveland.
Yeah, they are a much better team than Cleveland. Personnel-wise, they might not be better, but as a team, as a whole, the way they operate, they are a much better team than what the Cleveland Browns showed in the first game. Again, if the Titans do not get these problems fixed, then this game coming up, and it's going to be hard to fix those problems in 3 days, but the same problems that they had in game one, that they won, they had in game two, that they lost. And if they continue to have these problems, they're going to lose more games than not. The ineptness of the offense passing the ball, not sticking with Derrick Henry, when they need to. Not to say they totally went away from, but there's periods in the game where they decide to throw Deion Lewis. No, with all due respect.
It felt like 2018.
With all due respect, Deion Lewis, he's a good player, but I'm having my workhorse. This guy, he's proven to me since he's gotten the NFL, he's a damn good runner. 4 yards a clip. Over the last four years, 4 yards a clip. What more do he have to show? Does he have to show you?
I think a lot of people are going to focus on the way that Vrabel and the staff handled that 4th and 2 with 4 minutes to go. I think rightly so. That's a big talking point. But the thing that I kept going back to yesterday when I was rewatching the game and when I was thinking about, man, what was the moment that concerned me the most, right? Like, what was the thing I was the most worried about yesterday as I watched the game? And I keep going back to it. They started the drive on their own 11-yard line. And they gave the ball to Derrick Henry 3 consecutive plays, and he gained 35 yards at the end of the third quarter. They had the lead, they were backed up in their own territory, and they gave the ball to Derrick Henry. And I'm going, boom, 11 yards, boom, 8 yards, boom, 17 yards. And I'm going, holy cow, they're at midfield, and they're making a drive to win the game here. Then the fourth quarter, the changeover between the third and fourth quarter happens. They come out, and Deion Lewis is on the field, and they're passing the ball. And I'm going, wait a second, what are you doing? Arthur, hello? Are you anybody home? Like, you just ran you finally have momentum. You finally have the identity you want. You have the lead, and you're going into for the kill shot. You were going in to win the game, and you put Derrick Henry on the bench. Like, there's a changeover during the quarter. He's rested. It's not like he needs a timeout, right?
There's
a built-in timeout there.
In the squelching heat, the hottest recorded game in the history of Nissan Stadium, you could have used your 6'3", 240-pound sledgehammer to beat the Colts into submission in the final 15 minutes. You didn't do it.
Well, with 4 minutes left in the game, and I go back to this, with 4 minutes and 30-some seconds left in the game, you're down 2 points. What you essentially can do is get in your four-minute offense and put that big 6'3 guy in the backfield and let him roll. What you chose to do is throw the ball 3 times. You almost threw an interception on one, but you chose to run the ball 3 times in a row. And then you chose to waste 40 seconds because you didn't know what to do. Instead of turning around, we got 4 minutes left.
It was 5. More than that.
No, it was 4 minutes and 30-something seconds left when they got it.
The third down snap was at 4:28.
They had to throw
on that play.
When you have a back in the backfield that has proven he's going to get you four yards. It's 4 minutes left, 4 minutes left in the game. You're down 2 points. Run the football.
It even adds to your argument. I mean,
I don't get it.
First and second down on that drive, what are you doing? Third down and 10, okay, you have to throw it. I get it. But, like, first and second down, I'm with you. You got 5 minutes to go on the clock. Run the football. You got time.
615-737-1025. In about 15 minutes, Jeff Kelty, Preds assistant GM, will join us here live from Pete and Terry's Tavern. We'll come back. We'll continue on with some Titans calls and also a couple of takeaways from the weekend in the SEC. We're back after this on Morning Drive.
Listen, I know we talked about the Titans and them not having, trying to figure out their identity, whether they're going to be a run team, pass team, or anything else. But I'm going to tell you something. I tell you who got an identity. It's Cool Springs MD. And I've been telling you this, you know, for the last year almost, about Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with that experienced staff. Man, listen, they give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. And, man, we understand, I know, that we all need a better quality of life. So head on down to Cool Springs MD, and I'm going to tell you something about their services, because it has already helped many men of the Brentwood and Nashville and the surrounding areas here in Tennessee. Well, check it out. Improving their immune systems, energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And there's no better time to achieve a healthy lifestyle than now. What are you waiting on, man? Here's the number so you can make that appointment today. Do not wait until tomorrow. Tomorrow, make it today. Here's the number, 615-660-6900, 615-660-6900, or visit their website, coolspringsmd.com.
It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live this morning at Pete and Terry's Tavern, Bridgestone Arena. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Marquise Munson with you as we welcome in Preds Assistant General Manager Jeff Kelty. Jeff, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Good to have you in. One of the things that I was kind of thinking about with this team, and I was looking at some of the depth chart last night and going back and looking at rosters from years past, and we know the way that this team has been built over the last handful of years, great goaltending, probably the deepest group of blue liners in the league, but now all of a sudden you kind of look at lines one, line two, line three, and you say, hold on a second, is this the most talented group of forwards that the franchise has ever had? So I'll ask you that question. You know, lines one, two, three, and even all the way down onto the bench. Is this the most depth and talent they've had at the forward position?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, everybody knows our big signing this summer with Matt Duchene, and that was really what we kind of wanted to accomplish this offseason, to try and bolster our scoring depth, our secondary scoring. And we feel that we've done that by signing him, and now we'll have Michael Granlund and you know, in the fold here. Kind of, he came in the trade deadline last year, a little bit of a difficult situation, getting situated, coming to a new team, you know, trying to catch a moving train, so to speak, and he'll get a fresh start from the get-go here, be able to get chemistry, you know, with his line mates, and we really feel that, like I said, the addition of Duchene gives us, you know, that really strong 1-2 punch down the middle between him and Johansson, and you know, like I said, that's really what we're looking to accomplish this offseason.
Hey, sort of take us through y'all's thought process at this stage of the season with camp open and the preseason going through. You've obviously got some nice young talented pieces, some new draft picks, some guys you acquired for the PK trade. Obviously Jeremy Davies is an intriguing one, but there's not a ton of empty roster spots that are just glaring because you guys have put together a pretty good roster. So take the fans through sort of what you guys are doing as a scouting and front office staff, evaluating players, and like what are you looking for? Take the fans through that process over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I think you described it accurately. There's not a lot of spots, so to speak, or you know, a lot of pretty well established NHL players. We have 15 guys that are on one-way contracts. But that being said, as you pointed out, there's probably as good of a push from younger players as we've had in a while, that are kind of chomping at the bit to earn a roster spot and to contribute up here in Nashville. You know, Ellie Tolvanen's had a really good rookie camp and a strong start. Ren Pitlick is really, you know, who you saw briefly at the end of last year, he's really come in and played well right away. Or Anthony Richard has played well and had a couple of really good seasons the last couple of years down in Milwaukee. So, you know, we have the 15 guys that are, you know, somewhat established on one-way contracts. Like I said, these guys are pushing, and they want their opportunity too. So, you know, you can look at it as, I guess you can look at it as a, you know, a bit of a problem in the sense that we'll have some decisions to make. But we view it as a good problem because that internal competition is what I think can really, you know, we touched on a few minutes ago what we've done at the top end of our roster in terms of those top two scoring lines. But, you know, we're looking for scoring and contribution all the way through our lineup. And when you have that type of depth and that type of competition, you know, and that part of our depth chart, I think it's really going to bode well for us.
Now, is that one of the things, because, I mean, listen, we could point to the power play and say, well, this needs to get that area of the team, aspect of the team needs to get better. We can do that, but that's sort of low-hanging fruit here. But is what you just said as far as scoring distribution amongst the lines being a little bit more even? You know you're going to get more scoring from maybe your first two lines, but kind of evening that out with the rest of the team. Is that one of the things that this coaching staff has pinpointed that they need to get better, or we need to get better at that scoring distribution from line one to the last line?
Yeah, I mean, you always want contribution through your entire lineup. I mean, everybody wants to play with four lines now. I mean, that being said, it's the old saying, your best players still need to be your best players. I mean, if Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene and all these guys, if they don't produce for us, then we're in a tough spot. But even when those guys are pulling their weight, you need the contributions all the way through. You see it in the Stanley Cup playoffs all the time where, you know, the teams don't get to the end. If you watch the later rounds in the finals, they don't get to the end without their top guys getting it done. But then you also have, every year you have these storylines and contributions from guys down their line of third and fourth line guys that come out of the woodwork and make huge contributions for the team. And that's what you need. It's that's how competitive it is. That's how good the teams are. I mean, we could go into the season here and say any one of, you know, 8, 9, 10 teams could win the Stanley Cup. And when that's the case, those teams that are getting there, they're using their entire rosters, their entire lineups to get there. So, yeah, to answer your question, that's really what we're looking for. We're looking for contributions all the way through.
Jeff, take us behind the scenes when you're discussing, you know, a window of opportunity. We love to talk about the window in sports for a franchise, and sometimes the window closes too quickly. Sometimes it opens a bit prematurely, quicker than you thought. Sometimes it gets extended longer than you think. You kind of look at the St. Louis Blues last year, and here they were in late December, a total disaster. They go on to win the Cup. So take us, like, behind the scenes, the delicate balance of, you know, going for it now as a franchise while not completely depleting your farm system and yet replenishing the cupboard, all of those, you know, nuances. How difficult is it to balance those out for the betterment of the team, big picture, long term?
It's always difficult, and it's a balance, like you said. I mean, it's you know, we certainly consider ourselves in that window. But that being said, you've got to keep an eye on the future and always have the next, you know, young players coming up to help your team, because you really do need a mix and a balance of both, especially in the salary cap era that we're in. I mean, I think that you talk about window or what have you, I don't think there's any, I think it's difficult to just say, well, this is that one year that we're just going to go for it, because, you know, as I said before, there's any one of a number of teams that are capable of winning the Stanley Cup, and I think that the goal is to be good for an extended period of time, because hopefully one of those years you crack it and you win it. But I think it's hard to say that you're just going to have that one year. So we feel like we're close. We feel like we've been close for a while. Every year is a little bit different. You know, a couple of years ago, we really went all in at the trade deadline where we didn't have any early picks. But I think that, you know, as part of the process of that window, you're always looking for the next step. And I think you saw a little bit of that this summer. We traded PK. We didn't want to have to trade PK, but it was just kind of the business nature of it with his salary and everything. And it was kind of trying to redistribute our money a little bit in the form of signing Matt Duchene and, you know, getting some younger assets with it. You mentioned Jeremy Davies. We get Santini in the deal. We ended up with two draft picks that we turned into three draft picks at the draft. And, you know, you'll start to see some of those young players coming up and through over the next couple of years. So I think the goal is to, you know, for as long as you can to keep your window and keep your core intact while you're trying to always be looking to the future. So it's definitely a delicate balance, but we work at it every day. So,
Jeff, we appreciate a couple of minutes. Thank you so much. Continued success. We'll talk to you down the road.
No problem, guys. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Jeff Kelty, Preds Assistant General Manager, joining us here on Morning Drive as we are live this morning from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah, I think one quick takeaway, you know, and I said this last week when we talked about this team, I do feel like the depth of talent beneath the starting roster is better than it's been in a couple of years. That includes Daniel Carr, who we haven't talked a lot about, who's had a really good camp, Rem Pitlick, Rocco Grimaldi, you know, Ellie Tolvanen, we know about. There's a lot more talent in the pipeline today than there was at this time last year. And that's a really positive development for this organization.
All right, here's what we got coming up in the final 2 hours of the show. Chris Mason, our buddy from the Preds TV booth, is going to join us at 9 o'clock. Carl Taylor, head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals. But we'll come back and we'll go from the positive vibes of hockey to the negative results of football. The Titans fall 19-17 to the Colts yesterday. We'll try to make sense of that and also open up the phones again at 615-737-1025. Morning Drive, we're back after this on ESPN 1025 The Game.